Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Hannah Pegel. Our guest this week is USDA Undersecretary for Rural Development, Soshil Torres-Small, who joins us to discuss USDA's investments in rural America. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Department of Agriculture is out with new regulation to strengthen the integrity of the organic label. The rule broadens certification requirements for more aspects of the supply chain and standardizes certificates of organic operation, among many other changes. The Organic Trade Association called the new final rule the biggest change in organic regulations since the creation of the National Organic Program. The new rule is scheduled for implementation in 2024. California is drying out after weeks of rain, flooding, blizzards, and tornadoes. Coastal regions that grow berries and vegetables were among the areas flooded. Officials tell AgriPulse crop and agricultural infrastructure damages could reach $50 million in Monterey County. At least 20 people died in the storms, and communities have suffered more than $1 billion in damages to property, roads, and other infrastructure. Finally, the House Ag Committee has a dozen new Republicans. The committee's new GOP roster was rolled out this week, but no word quite yet on the Democratic side of the aisle. Among the new Republican members is Oklahoma's Frank Lucas, who chaired the panel during the development of the 2014 Farm Bill. The new members will join 15 returning Republicans, led by House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn Thompson. A former member of that committee is now at the Department of Agriculture as the Undersecretary for Rural Development. Soshil Torres-Small has had the position since October 2021, and she sees many areas where both Congress and the administration can invest in rural communities.
As USDA looks forward to working with a bipartisan group in Congress, and as well as partners and stakeholders and the public, so that we can identify shared priorities for the 2023 Farm Bill and ensure that the programs USDA implements will best serve all people. Rural and the people who depend on the work, the hard work that happens across rural America. I recently had the chance to testify in the Senate about the Farm Bill, and senators asked me a lot of questions, mostly about how rural development can better serve people all across rural America, how we can make sure that our programs are easier to access so that you don't necessarily need a grant writer to be able to qualify for the funds. We know in order to reach the people who need and deserve our services most, we've got to make sure that our programs are easier to access to get real work done for the hardworking people all across rural America.
So let's kind of look at the existing efforts that's been done so far. The rural development has a rural broadband reconnect program, and though there's been many rounds of funding that have already been introduced, you know, can you talk about the impact that the funding that has already been introduced has had on these rural areas?
It's a key place about how we can invest in rural America and make sure that communities can have vibrancy and can grow rather than worrying about people having to leave to chase their best opportunities. The Reconnect program continues to have more applications than our funding that's available. And so even with the bipartisan infrastructure law that invested $65 billion in getting high-speed internet to people who don't have it, we know there's still going to be need out there. There's a lot of work to be done, but there's some exciting changes happening. I was recently in Georgia where we announced a public service telephone company received an investment of over $36 million. That investment is going to connect thousands of people, dozens of schools, and hundreds of businesses and farms in rural parts of the state. There's a kid in Georgia who used to get teased at school because he had, and folks knew he had to do his homework at a Chick-fil-A. So one day he came into school and he said, "Y'all are going to have to stop teasing me because I'm about to have better internet than all of you." And that matters because kids know what's fair, they know what's equitable, and they know that no matter where you live, you should be able to get high-speed internet.
The round four Reconnect applications closed on November 2nd. Do you have any insight on when that next round of funding might be made available?
We're working hard to review applications for round four and expect to announce those awards in the summer of 2023. Part of the thing that we do as we review these awards is make sure that we're identifying other sources of funding that are out there and not duplicating our services. We're also expecting to open another application window for the Community Connect program in the spring of this year, and we hope to announce those awards in the fall.
We'll be back with more discussion with Undersecretary Torres Small right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
At Bayer, we know possibility grows from the seed of a vision. That you can start small and still reach big dreams. That we can nurture the future in our schools to create innovations down the road. That rural communities aren't just farms, but all the people they feed. That's why Bayer partners with farmers to protect those ideas. Because together, we're tending tomorrow's harvest.
Welcome back. There's been concern in Washington and across the country about the accuracy of the maps the Federal Communications Commission uses to identify gaps in broadband coverage. The FCC released draft new maps back in November. When we talked to Undersecretary Torres Small, we asked her how these maps are being used to make funding decisions.
Good maps are crucial. And when it comes to rural development and our programs, they're most helpful when it's for communities and telephone service providers to be able to evaluate what places they might be able to serve in the future. But when it comes to making our awards, we don't rely solely on the maps. We look at the maps and also a desktop review of what information's out there. Then we also ask other telecommunications providers, are there areas that you think you're covering right now? And if there's a discrepancy, we actually send people on the ground to review whether or not what folks are saying is accurate. So we believe that we have a good way of reviewing what's actually there when we're making our awards.
Now, we've talked a lot about rural broadband thus far, but rural development has its hand in many different aspects of rural communities, and one of those being the meat processing sector and the investments that were just distributed there. How do you expect those investments to impact the communities where those projects have been funded?
President Biden knows that by investing in more options for farmers and ranchers, we're investing in rural people and rural communities and also supporting the food supply chain as a whole. This also fits into what Chairman Thompson was saying about the importance of a vibrant rural community and supporting opportunities and choices for people who live there. I was recently at Marksbury Farm Foods in Lancaster, Kentucky, and I got to sit down and have lunch with some employees there. And they were so proud of the work they do because they were giving farmers more options. They were adding value to the food chain, and they were producing a product that tasted amazing and that the customers were looking for. Then I got to go down to Southern Ohio to visit this really small meatpacking plant. And farmers were choosing to take their meat there because they knew that they'd have more of the food dollar as a result. They could add value to their beef or their hogs because they could put a specific label that showed their farm and where that meat came from. So there's really exciting innovation happening all across rural America, and Rural Development is proud to support that.
Rural development helps provide money to many different areas of rural communities. And I'm curious, from your travels and your discussions that you've had with community members, what are you seeing and hearing? Is there interest in the programs that rural development has, or are you finding that these programs are oversubscribed? Or maybe there's a need for more awareness of what programs are available for them to apply to?
There's a huge need and a huge interest in our programs. Rural people want options. They don't want to be stuck just having to produce one thing. They want to be able to find value add for their communities and also bring back more money to the rural places that they love so much. And rural development has a key role in that, whether that's helping produce their commodities with higher energy efficiency, or whether that's finding a way to add value to the things that they grow, the animals that they raise, so that they can get a larger share of the food dollar. One of the challenges that we've heard and we've discussed when it comes to with the Senate and the Farm Bill is how do we make sure that our programs are easier to access? So the people who need them, the people who know that those opportunities are out there and then are able to apply without a whole bunch of hoops to jump over.
You know, the boots on the ground, does rural development have enough staff to kind of meet the need for all of the programs that it is putting out into rural America? Is there enough people to maximize the agency's impact?
We work hard to deliver every single day. And one of the things that I am most proud of at rural development are the people that we have all across the country serving rural America. It's pretty unique across the federal government to have area offices in the rural places that we serve. The president's budget included an investment in that staff to be able to rebuild and invest in those locations. So we'll continue to work to identify the opportunities to do that in the future.
Undersecretary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more rural broadband discussion, but first, AgriPulse's Andrew Hunneke takes a look at an important region with declining water supplies in this week's Map It Out.
Farmers across the plains are searching for answers as the Ogallala Aquifer continues to shrink. This map shows an outline of the aquifer. It stretches from the panhandle of Texas to the edge of South Dakota, and it's the backbone of agriculture in the Great Plains, supporting around $35 billion worth of crops a year, according to USDA's National Institute of Food and Agriculture. Water is being depleted faster than it can be refilled in several areas of the aquifer as farmers use water to irrigate croplands and nourish livestock. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, water levels have dropped more than 100 feet since 1950 in parts of Kansas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. Local groundwater districts introduced restrictions to try and prevent further depletion. Some of those include allowing producers a specific amount of water to use over a five-year period and having farmers use 25% less water than normal. But many users of the aquifer are still worried these steps might not be enough to maintain the long-term availability of the critical water source. Noah Wicks has more on the subject in his article on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Every morning, American corn farmers roll their sleeves up and start the work of growing a better future, one bushel at a time, with America's crop. A better future made possible by their unmatched sustainability practices and the extraordinary benefits and uses of corn throughout the global economy. And the National Corn Growers Association proudly supports and advocates for all they do, year in and year out.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Excited to get into a panel discussion. We are joined with Kate Foxwood with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, Jim Matheson with the National Rural Electric Cooperatives Associations, and Emily Buckman with the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now, Jim, my first question goes to you. There's been many parallels that draw on electrifying rural America back in the 1930s with connecting rural America with internet connection today. You know, I'm curious, from your standpoint, how long will it take to bridge those gaps together?
Well, those comparisons are appropriate. You know, in the 1930s, the for-profit companies wouldn't serve rural America with electricity because there's just enough profit in it. And even though FDR created subsidies and offered them to the for-profit companies, they still wouldn't do it. So people living in rural America formed their own cooperatives that they owned themselves, and they went out and they built their electric system. Flash forward 80 years later, here we are with broadband. And again, the for-profit companies are much more interested in population clusters where there's density, where they can make more money. Our belief in the electric cooperative world is we believe in universal service where everyone should have access, even that person at the end of the line. Let's not kid ourselves, though. These rural areas are the most expensive, hardest to serve areas in America. So it's going to take some time. There's significant new federal funding that's going to accelerate this, but there's a lot of work to be done, and we're anxious to be part of the solution.
Kate, going to you next. You know, the supply chain and the labor markets are two areas that pose challenges for getting broadband out to rural America. You know, how are those two challenges impacting your AEM members specifically?
You know, that's a great question. We talk a ton about supply chain. We talked a lot about it the last 2 years, and I don't think 2023 is going to be any different. We had a recent survey of our members. We took the pulse of what they're feeling with their supply chain issues, and not surprisingly, nearly all respondents, so I'm saying like 98%, so they're still experiencing supply chain issues. And they're not only ongoing, but it's getting worse, frankly. So this means that all the different parts and components that go into, say, a trencher that lays fiber, for example, for broadband, are on different timetables. And so the question is raised is, do we actually have enough equipment, like a trencher, to get the physical infrastructure in place? The second piece we learned from the survey is that our members are continuing to experience workforce issues, and this is not just in manufacturing. This is across the whole kind of infrastructure career arena. We've talked a ton about that before. The infrastructure bill was passed, about the need to kind of backstop this kind of workforce crunch that we're seeing. So what does that mean for rural broadband? I think those are all questions that we need to continue to try to answer, both in the private sector and in the public sector with Congress. We're looking to lawmakers to help craft legislative solutions to really revitalize American manufacturing, to address kind of to be a part of the broadband expansion process.
Emily, bringing you into the conversation here, there's been concern at USDA regarding the accuracy of the Federal Communications Commission's maps that they use to identify gaps in rural broadband coverage. The FCC rolled out a draft of those new maps back in November, but from your standpoint, what are you hearing about the accuracy of those maps?
As you know, Farm Bureau has been a strong advocate for updated and more granular maps for a long time. So this discussion has been going on for a very long time. And following the passage of the Broadband Data Act, we had all been waiting for a long time for the updated map that was released in November. So once that was released for public consumption in November, we knew there would be room for improvement. And like the chairwoman said, you know, it is the beginning of a long-term effort for continuous improvement. The agency is providing an opportunity for the public to improve the draft through a challenge process. And we did encourage our state organizations and grassroots leaders to participate in this process to help improve the map as much as possible. If we want to ensure areas lacking broadband get served, we need to do our part. As expected, we did hear concerns from the countryside about the map, including structures that were indicated to have service, as well as overstating of served areas, which is why it's even more important for folks to take a look at that draft and try to improve it.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. This year, we'll focus on next-gen food and farm policy as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy discussions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 20th at the National Press Club in Washington and through our virtual experience. Take advantage of early bird rates until February 15th. Register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Welcome back. Technology is constantly changing, and farmers rely on that connectivity to support their operations. The Association of Equipment Manufacturers says it's vital to future-proof the network we are building out.
We've long advocated as an industry for a tech-neutral approach to broadband deployment, maintaining a view that wireless is just as important as fiber. Wireless is important for precision agriculture. Fiber is important to ensure that broadband infrastructure can withstand our future needs, for example. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention that we really want to see rural connectivity that provides coverage from the farmhouse to the barn to the fields. You know, for example, farmers use precision ag equipment to cut down on inputs and costs, but it's really dependent on the availability of rural connectivity. If a farmer can't get connected, there is a whole host of benefits from precision agriculture that they're not going to be able to utilize to the fullest potential. And, you know, we're talking about feeding the world, right? This is a big high stakes issue here. So this Congress in particular, we're going to be really pushing to enact legislation that gets precision ag technology to the small and medium sized farmer. And then when you think about all the connectivity issues that are still at play, they're very tied together, for example, but we need swifter action on connecting rural America in order for our farmers to realize those very real and important benefits that precision ag provides.
And Jim, the 2021 infrastructure bill directed $42.5 billion in broadband funding to go directly to the states, not USDA, to be distributed. What impact will that state funding have on addressing the gaps in rural broadband?
Look, it's a lot of money. It's not all the money that's out there. As you said, USDA has a role, FCC has a role. There are different sources of funding. And this new amount of money from the infrastructure bill that's going to go through the states is an important addition in terms of resources. But it's got to work in terms of the maps being accurate. You mentioned the maps earlier. And I'll tell you, it's been the great impediment to rural America being adequately served, because the maps that dictate where funding goes by defining what's underserved or unserved, that's all data reported by the current providers. So you got these current providers have ancient equipment with lousy speeds, and they've tried to protect their investment and not everyone coming to build real broadband. That's why we're hoping with these new funding mechanisms through the states that there's going to be an understanding of making sure the maps are accurate, number one. And number two, we hope it requires real speed. You mentioned future proofing. I'll tell you what, the FCC's been behind on this one. We think it ought to be at least 100 up, 100 down. USDA's been better with their Reconnect program in terms of emphasizing adequate speeds, but we shouldn't make these significant investments with speeds that are going to be out of date before the fiber is even completed. So these are great opportunities, but there are a lot of open questions we're going to have to answer to make sure we're effective in using these taxpayer dollars.
And Emily, wrapping up the conversation with you, you know, what would universal rural broadband connectivity mean for the economic development in these rural areas?
Well, when discussing the importance of connectivity and economic development, I'd like to pivot to our up-and-coming members. We have a strong Young Farmers and Ranchers program, and in conversation with these members, they share how they want to build out their operations and raise their families in rural America. They want to thrive there. So deployment of broadband is critical to stimulating and revitalizing the rural economy.
Well, there's been a lot that's been done and still a lot to come in terms of rural broadband connectivity. Thank you all for joining us today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, Andrew Hunneke takes a look at new money for Farm Bill programs.
As Congress begins to write the next Farm Bill, determining how much money lawmakers have to work with is top of mind. But some money has already been directed to some Farm Bill programs before the process has even started. This chart shows Farm Program Budget Authority that is provided through fiscal year 2032, including the additional funding shown in yellow and brown at the top that's going to programs under the Inflation Reduction Act. When lawmakers and administration officials have certain priorities they would like to push, they can add more money through supplemental funding, which is not part of the Farm Bill's baseline. The Trump administration funneled more than $25 billion to producers affected by a trade war with China and to offset the market impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. During the pandemic, Congress also provided supplemental pandemic assistance topping $30 billion to farms and more than $60 billion for nutrition assistance to help offset financial burdens for consumers and producers. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Two members of our AgriPulse team will be in Florida. Look for Jackie Facca at the International Dairy Foods Association's Dairy Forum in Orlando, and Noah Wicks will be at the Clean Fuels Alliance Conference in Tampa. AgriPulse.com will have the latest from these conferences and more throughout the week. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Hannah Pagel. Thanks for joining us.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.